my job, is to make sure that they've got the environment, the resources, you know, the support to be able to do the things that they do, which is what really brings the value to the aviation industry. So I think, you know, those sort of two things really, making sure that the people are front and center, they're the important people, they're the important ones, that's the important part of the business. And therefore, they need to own that vision, those strategic goals, because it's they're the ones who are going to have to deliver it.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 41 of the show. In this episode, we are joined by Andrew Nicholson, who is the CEO and founder of Osprey Flight Solutions. They are an organization that is driving a quantum shift in the capabilities available to the aviation industry for security risk management. Andrew spent 12 years in the Royal Navy and 6 years with UK Special Forces, which included operational tours in all major conflict regions. Leaving the military at the height of the Somali piracy phenomenon, for 3 years, Andrew led the maritime and oil and gas divisions for the largest provider of maritime security in the industry. Andrew then moved to International SOS and Control Risks in July 2014 to head up the aviation security team. Realizing that the industry's requirement for risk management support had changed in the wake of the MH17 disaster, Andrew co-founded Osprey, which is now recognized across the industry as the leader in open source risk management data, developing innovative tools to support all operators, no matter their size or resource, in conducting comprehensive and accurate risk management. One of the many highlights in this episode is Andrew talking freely about his own leadership approach, an approach that is founded on a belief that each individual in his organization is more important than the commercial success of the company itself, and how this panned out practically during the COVID-19 pandemic. Do also stay tuned right to the very end, folks, as two of my former guests, Dr. Vicky Barnes and Carola Becker, have provided an exclusive offer for you on one of their programs coming up in the future. But for now, let's dive right into my incredible conversation with Andrew Nicholson. Andrew, a very warm welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on the show, especially as I understand as we're recording that you've had a particularly busy 36 hours or so, right?
Yeah, thanks, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you very much for inviting me on. And yes, it's been pretty crazy with the events in Belarus or in the airspace over Belarus. So it's the sort of thing that takes a lot of our time and a lot of people are interested in. Obviously, there's been a big response to it. So it makes our lives very busy, which is good.
Yeah, that's great. And Andrew, I guess that's a nice lead in really to what is always my first question, which is the context and background question. So that people understand, A, what we're going to talk about, but B, why that's made you so busy lately, can you just tell us a little bit about what it is that you do right now? And I guess the condensed version of the career history or journey that's got you to where you are today?
So Osprey Flight Solutions, which is our company, we provide risk management support to the aviation industry. It's provide that. What that means is that we help them to understand the environment in which they're operating. We help them to understand the threats and risks that they face day to day. And we help them to keep their flights safer and more secure. And we do this from a very data-driven way rather than the traditional sort of consultancy model. We're very driven by the data. We have a tech platform that we use to systematically understand their risk profile as an operator or an organization. So clearly, events over Belarus over the last few days has encouraged a demand for understanding what the sort of regulatory environment is around there and how airspace is managed and that kind of thing, which is an area, of course, which we do a lot of work on. So, you know, that's what we do as a business. My background, so I did 12 years in the Royal Navy and Royal Marines, and then after leaving in 2011, really at the height of the Somali piracy phenomenon, I went into maritime security, helping offshore oil and gas, particularly keep their rigs secure and protected from piracy as well as shipping. And then moved into the sort of aviation space pretty much as MH17 happened, the Malaysian Airlines flight that was shot down flying over Ukraine. And, you know, that was quite a watershed moment for the industry. Of course, it's not the first airline that's been shot down or blown out of the sky, but it was a watershed moment, you know, in the modern era of communication, the internet and risk management and social media for that matter, putting the industry under a huge amount of pressure to just do things better. And in fact, the industry themselves wanting to do things better and make sure this kind of thing didn't happen again. And that really was where, you know, the acorn from which Osprey grew first appeared, trying to find a better way of understanding the operating environment to help the industry manage those risks and to stop these kind of things happening again. So I guess that's a bit of background to where we've come from.
And Andrew, I'm going to do what I promised before we hit record and take us off script straight away, if that's okay with you. So I'm just wondering, from your perspective, now being a MD CEO, what are some of the leadership lessons that you learned from your time in the military, or some of the leadership practices, principles, tools, whatever you want to call it, that you've found do transfer into the business world? Because I'm always fascinated by this, partly because of my own career. I think there are certain things that do transfer and translate really well, and there's absolutely some that don't. And I've seen kind of leaders, ex-military leaders, struggle because they try and implement all of what they did in the military into the business world. So I'd love to get your take on that, if anything comes to mind.
Much debate is conducted about the transferability of military skills into the civilian world. And of course, a lot of that is around the leadership area, I think. And I was lucky enough in my military career to have a broad spectrum of experiences with leadership, including spending some time teaching leadership at the Britannia Royal Naval College in Dartmouth. And leadership in the military, you're put in different situations. You're being asked to encourage or to lead your team in very different situations than you do in the civilian world. And of course, your relationship with those individuals is very different as well. There is a much stronger hierarchy within military organizations than there is within the civilian world. But I think fundamentally, or the most important thing that I learned, and this isn't necessarily something that you're taught in the military, but something that I learned, was trust and care and a sort of belief in your team, the importance of the team itself. I was very lucky in my time in the military to experience some very high standard, high quality teams and be part of those teams, and to be able to, you know, enjoy and learn from extremely capable people that I was in a, you know, quote unquote position of leadership over. But in fact, probably it was the other way around. I did a lot of learning from those people, or at least as much learning from them as they did from me or leading. But I think that, you know, that ability to work in a team, to understand where you're trying to go with that team, your focus, your direction, and work together as a really close-knit a group of people, and trusting those individuals, caring about them, and you know, in the military sense, I know it sounds dramatic, but it is a case of being willing to, you know, put your life on the line for those people. And I think that approach to leadership is one of the most powerful things that I learned and developed at my time in the military, which translates very well. I say very well, translates very well. It is an essential component, as far as I'm concerned, of good leadership is that trust and care that you have with your team and your people. There are lots of other things that you learn, again, quote unquote, learn, because I don't believe you can really learn leadership. You can learn techniques, but I don't think you can learn leadership from a training course. You can learn it over time and experience. But there are lots of things that don't translate. I don't think the hierarchical approach to leadership that many military organizations, perhaps the Navy more than some, is applicable in the civilian world as much. But of course, a lot of the other skills, the teamwork, the drive, the work ethic, all of those kind of things are very transferable into the civilian world.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Andrew. And it's a nice lead-in, actually, to something else I wanted to ask you about. I mean, we ended up connecting because I saw an article piece written about you. I think it was in the CEO publication. There's a couple of things that you said in there that I just really want to delve into if we can. One was this piece around, I understand that you have this belief that, I think you said, each individual is more important than the commercial success of the company, and that everyone deserves the trust and space to achieve their goals. Can you just talk to us a little bit more kind of about that? And I guess how that manifests on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, sure. I do think that's the area which I learned in the military. I think the companies, businesses are transitory, being honest and blunt about it. You know, companies come and go, businesses come and go, and they are not the most important things in the world. The commercial success of a company, if a company fails, then other companies will be successful. Now, that's not to say, of course, that my focus isn't the success of our business. Of course it is. But it's the success of our business is a focus because I believe that what we do can help the aviation industry, the organizations that we work for, in improving their risk management and keeping people safer and more secure. But to me, the individual people, the people in our team, and the word people, these are individuals, these are mothers and fathers and sons and daughters, and each of those people are, to me, much more important than the business itself. And yes, of course, there's a lot of business sense in making sure that the number one priority is the people that make up that company, that organization. But all a company is really, I think, is a mechanism by which you can get a group of people to focus on one particular end game or one particular goal. And actually, it's the people which make that organization. We're extremely lucky, and I feel hugely privileged, you know, with the team that we have here at Osprey. The word expert is thrown around an awful lot all over the world, but I truly believe that some of the people we've got here at Osprey are literally the epitome of the word expert. It's why the word expert was ever created for some of the people we have here. But the broader team, the way that they work together is just so impressive and inspiring and humbling to me, the effort and the work that everyone does to support the aviation industry. But I, you know, going back to the point, really, those individuals, their health, their mental health, their goals, their aims, their fulfillment in life is to me much more important than the company and the business, because people are more important than companies are. And that's one of my fundamental beliefs.
It's fascinating to hear you say that, Andrew. And regular listeners of the podcast will no doubt have heard me talk about this before. But I guess one of my fundamental beliefs about leadership is that kind of a leader exists to deliver the results for which they're accountable for, and to look after the people that they've got the privilege and responsibility to lead. And I've said for years, because everyone that we lead is someone's mum, dad, husband, wife, brother, sister, et cetera, et cetera. And I've never heard anybody say that before. And I just heard you say, and I don't say that because I claim that kind of insight is uniquely mine, or kind of I'm some guru in terms of leadership. But the reason I share this now is, like, a lot has been said probably over the past 10 years since Simon Sinek's TED Talk and book Start With Why, about finding people who believe what you believe, and kind of that's what drives motivation. And it's fascinating. As I heard you say that, like, I just got this, like, strong sense of connection with you, and thought, there's a guy kind of I'd love to hang out with, I'd love to work with, because we've got this shared belief. And I just thought it was worth kind of sharing with listeners, like, that's the power of kind of purpose and getting really clear on what you stand for, right? And I'd imagine when those that work within Osprey kind of for you, alongside you, when they understand that's one of the main drivers for why you do what you do, that's got to be hugely motivating and inspiring for them, right? And make them want to come to work and do their best.
Well, I hope so. Obviously, you'd have to ask them, but I hope that it does. I mean, I hope that, you know, we all spend so much of our time in a work environment. You know, so much of our lives is spent, I'd like to say, in an office, but clearly the last 15 months, not quite the case, but so much of our lives is spent working for organisations, for companies, for businesses, whatever it is. We're all failing if we don't make that, you know, that huge part of all of our lives as fulfilling, as exciting, as enjoyable as we possibly can, because it has such an impact on everything else that we do. It has an impact on the way that we relate to our families, our children, you know. And I've seen this, and we've been through some tough times as a business, and I've always done my very best to stop it having an impact on my life, my family, my children. But I came to a realization that I can't distinguish the two, or don't want to distinguish the two. They're both huge, huge parts of my life. And therefore, I've got to make sure that big part that I spend in the office, I find inspiring and enjoyable. And it's one of the reasons why we started the business was because I just wasn't getting that inspiration and that enjoyment elsewhere. But I want everybody else in the company to feel that same way, to want to come to work, to enjoy it because it is exciting and inspiring and enjoyable and makes their lives better, not worse. So, yeah, that's a very, very important part of it.
Yeah, and that's a nice lead-in that you gave me there to something else that occurred to me to ask you as well, Andrew. In that, I imagine that the past 14 or 15 months as we've gone through the COVID pandemic have been particularly challenging for you, the aviation sector as a whole. So I just wonder, sort of these beliefs that you have around leadership, sort of how have they sort of manifested during that period? Kind of what's your leadership approach been to leading through this period of massive uncertainty we've all been through and are still in to a degree? Kind of what's that looked like for you and everyone at Osprey?
It's an interesting one because, as you say, the aviation sector has been hit. I mean, it is the worst crisis the aviation sector's ever seen in the history of aviation. It's massive, and the loss of jobs, the furlough, all of that kind of stuff, and of course, most importantly, the grief, the loss of loved ones, has had a huge, huge impact on all the people that work within aviation. Again, you know, aviation is the people, really. We've had a successful year business-wise. I'm not saying it hasn't been without its challenges, but the challenges haven't been commercial for us. The challenges have been, you know, again, helping our people to manage, helping the team to manage what is very difficult. You know, lots of parents homeschooling their children and dealing with the challenges of that, as well as, you know, as well as working and those sometimes conflicting demands on people's time and very, very stress-inducing environment. So for us as a business, it's been a successful year. But I think some of the reason for that and some of the way that we've, again, maintained our inspiration, our enjoyment, our drive, our motivation has been that, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, in sort of March last year, when we realized this was going to be a big thing for the industry and, you know, massive thing for the industry. And we didn't expect it to go on as long as it has, but we knew for at least 6 months it was going to be a massive issue. And we thought we're not going to be out there selling subscriptions to our servers left, right, and center. That's just not going to be happening, and understandably not going to be happening. But that all said, the aviation industry, the most important thing for the aviation industry is that it gets flying again. And we get aircraft back up in the air. And in order to get aircraft back up in the air, the industry needs to understand the risks. So the work that we do can support the industry. We just know we're not going to get any money for it, basically. So right at the beginning of the pandemic, we said, right, we're going to provide a whole bunch of stuff for free. And we still are across the board. And we're going to give every organization who needs support in terms of or consideration in terms of finance, payments, all that, contracts, all that kind of stuff, we will support the industry in every way we can. And we made that decision. We made that decision together. And I think for all of us, you know, for me definitely, and I hope for the rest of the team, I found that hugely motivating, hugely inspiring, and, you know, probably one of the most rewarding periods of our time in the business, because we've been able to help, and we have people coming up to us saying, this is phenomenal. You know, there's no other way we would have been able to understand the risks that are out there. It's enabled us to fly more than we would have been able to. It's enabled us to conduct cargo flights that otherwise we wouldn't have been able to, because we can understand the risks. And you're providing this for free because we can't afford to pay for it at the moment. So we're keeping people safer. We're allowing people to fly and to operate, which is helping the industry get back on its feet. And that, to me, has been hugely rewarding over the last 15 months.
That's fascinating, Andrew. And again, it leads me nicely into one of the other main things I wanted to ask you. So in that same article that I mentioned earlier on, the other quote from you was kind of, I'll read this out. You're saying you have a non-negotiable belief in two-way transparency and ensuring that the company's vision, mission, and strategic goals are not just understood, but owned by every person in the team. and how autonomy enables innovation and agility. I just found that really fascinating when I read that. And the main reason I say that is that I think it's probably fair to say that's an aspiration that the vast majority of organizations and businesses have, especially around the piece of making sure that sort of the vision and mission is fully understood. But equally, I don't think there are perhaps that many, or certainly not a huge number of organizations who truly achieve that and are able to execute that and make sure everybody does have that level of clarity. So I guess this is a two-part question I'm about to ask. Like, do you think that helped in the situation you've just described, where you made some of those choices early on? And just how have you got to the point where everybody is so clear about kind of what kind of Osprey exists to do and what you're trying to create?
You know, I absolutely agree with you, Ben. I've worked for a number of organizations who, you know, state this as their priority and what they're trying to achieve in terms of mission and strategy and vision. There hasn't been a huge amount of success often in making sure that people do really understand that. We're lucky in that we're a small business, and I think this is easier in small businesses. Small organizations, of course it is, because there are a few people and you can get everyone around the table and you can talk about it and all the rest of it. So it's a lot easier for us, and it's been a lot easier for us at our stage of growth as an organization, because it is exciting what we're doing and people are bought into it, invested. Maintaining that when you're a much larger established business and individual people are a smaller part of that business or perceive themselves to be a smaller part of that business is much more of a challenge, I think. But in terms of what we do, the first thing that I do is keep our mission very, very simple. We have the same mission that we've had since day one, which is very simple. We believe that everyone should be as safe and secure as possible when they travel by air. And that's it. And it won't surprise you to hear that I'm a big fan of Simon Sinek as well. And you know, we have tried to follow the Golden Circle principles, starting with why. And that clear mission around keeping people safe and secure and doing everything that we possibly can, using every technique, every tool, every technology to innovate, to drive safety, security forward, to risk management, to help people to understand those threats and those risks, to avoid them or to mitigate them and to keep themselves safer. Having that at the core of everything that we do is very important. And we put it up, you know, we put that slide up at the beginning of every presentation we ever do.
Oh, wow.
We've recently moved into a new office, but when the office is branded up, it will be, you know, it will be written in big letters on the wall as well. So it is there. But I think as you take that and when you filter that down, I think one of the really important things is that filtering that down from a, you know, from a mission into a vision and strategic goals, that's not my job. That's everyone's job. Giving people ownership of that vision, the strategic goals, is not about me writing something and then sending it out to everyone saying, "Well, this is our vision and strategic goals." Right? Everyone needs to learn and buy into it. No, that's never going to work. You know, when we review our strategic goals, particularly and our vision, on a relatively regular basis, at least once every 6 months, it's everyone that does it. Everyone inputs into it. Everybody suggests changes. Everybody reviews it. We sit around a table and have a good long discussion about it. And that's, I think, one of the techniques that engenders that ownership, because everyone does own it. Hmm. Everyone has the ability to change that. And again, I think that comes from trust. I think, you know, I do not have, I don't have all the answers. I don't have any of the answers. And that's why we've built this fantastic team, because the answers come from them. And you know, one of the other things that I always talk about is leadership through service. What that means to me is that it's everybody else that does the important job in this business, in this company. It's not me. My role is purely and simply to make sure that they have everything that they need in order to do their important job. That's my job, is to make sure that they've got the environment, the resources, you know, the support to be able to do the things that they do, which is what really brings the value to the aviation industry. So I think, you know, those sort of two things, really making sure that the people are front and center, they're the important people, they're the important ones, that's the important part of the business, and therefore they need to own that vision, those strategic goals, because it's they're the ones who are going to have to deliver it.
That's fascinating, Andrew. The bit that stood out for me, from what you just said, that I just want to repeat for the benefit of everybody listening, because I think it is so simple, so obvious when I heard you say it, and I suspect so powerful, is just that piece around every presentation or slide deck that's created has the mission as the first page. Like, what a brilliantly simple, powerful way to keep it front and center of mind and keep you focused on ultimately kind of why you exist and what the mission is, right? Like, companies spend probably thousands with consultants trying to embed missions, and there you go, just do that. Fantastic.
Well, as I said, I think we're lucky. You know, it is easier with smaller businesses, and it's much more difficult when you've got hundreds or thousands of employees and they're spread around the world. It's a much more difficult thing to do, and I fully understand that. But you know, we are where we are, and it's definitely something that's important to me to make sure that everyone buys into that.
Yeah, fantastic, Andrew. I'm conscious you've had a busy morning already with media interviews, and I think you said you've got some more to go. So I want to be respectful of your time. So probably just a couple of slightly more quickfire questions, if we may.
Of course.
The first one that people always love to know: do you have any particular routines, ways of working, productivity kind of hacks that serve you well and enable you to play at your best and support the people doing the most important job, to use your words?
I mean, I think, you know, and I've probably come across as, you know, very people-focused, which I am, of course, but it's just as important to look after yourself and your own mental health and your own physical health as well. You know, if I wasn't in a good space, then it'd be very difficult for me to support the rest of the team. So taking the time to spend and focus on my children, putting my phone down, turning it off, turning my laptop off, and focusing on my children, my family, my wife, and having that separation from the consistent, you know, clamor for attention that a business can have is very important. Taking time to play my guitar, to go for a bike ride, you know, those sort of things are also very important to look after to my mental health, give me the space to be able to support everyone else in the way that I need to. And it's often a difficult thing to do, I think, because I think if you're going off for a bike ride, people can see that as very selfish. And sometimes, I mean, bike ride. But, you know, if you're taking time out for yourself, it can be perceived as being selfish. But I think it is so important, because without doing that, you will not have the mental capacity to be able to support others in the way that you need to.
I love that. I often describe that as being appropriately selfish, exactly to your point. Like, we have to look after ourselves, right? Because if we don't, we can't look after and effectively lead those that we lead. We can't lead our teams and organizations from our sick bed, right?
Exactly. Which I've done before.
I think.
Very unsuccessfully. But it's funny how quickly that teaches you that it's important to look after yourself. Yeah.
And final question, Andrew, what are the one or two books perhaps that have either had the greatest impact on you, or the one or two books that you find yourself recommending to other people most often?
I love The Black Swan by Nicholas Nassim Taleb. I mean, I read it quite a while ago now, but it had a big impact on me in terms of how I view the world. And I think it was a really interesting and quite inspiring book to read in a different way of looking at the world, really. So that's one that I often recommend to people to read. I do like Malcolm Gladwell's books. I think they're very good. Outliers, David and Goliath, both of those are books that I've read a few times and enjoy. But I also do like faction, or whatever the phrase is that explains books or describes books that are, you know, based on historical events or but put into a sort of fictional environment. Books like The Kite Runner, I think, is just a phenomenal book. You know, having spent time in the region, I think it really brings to life the environment, the culture, the situation over there. Well, at the same time, obviously, an exceedingly good story behind it as well. So that to me is a fantastic book as well.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about fiction. I mean, for many years, I've been a consumer of business, personal development, leadership type books. And again, for many years, I had the view that, well, what's the point in reading fiction? I'm not going to gain anything from that. So I didn't bother. But more and more, actually, I realized reading a good fictional book is, to your point earlier, it's a great way to detach, to switch off from work and the business, allow your mind to wander, recharge and clear your head, right? It's almost a a defrag of your brain, for those people remember when you used to have to defrag your laptop PC.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's a really good analogy, the defragging. I think it's yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think that would necessarily translate to everybody. So some people might need to Google what is a defrag, but there you go. Andrew, thank you so much for your time today. Before you go, if people do want to sort of connect with you perhaps or find out more about kind of you or the business, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, either on our website, ospreyflightsolutions.com, or through LinkedIn. We're very active on LinkedIn, as am I, so people could just reach out to me directly on LinkedIn. Those are probably the two best ways to get in touch.
That's fantastic. Andrew, thank you once again for coming on the show. Hope you have a productive day, a good week, and I wish you every success with the business and helping getting the aviation industry back up and on its feet. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben. It's been a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, folks, but most importantly, I really hope that you are able to go away and make some small positive changes as a result of what you've just heard. And now, here are the details of that offer that I mentioned in the introduction. Two of my fantastic previous guests on the show, Dr. Vicky Barnes and Carola Becker, have kindly offered a 15% discount to listeners of this show on their ski retreat to Colorado in January 2022. This exclusive package, this exclusive retreat, includes luxury accommodation, a private nutritionally focused chef who'll be working closely with Carola, skiing in Colorado's famous champagne powder, yoga, meditation, along with having constant access to Vicky and Carola and having them on hand to talk about positive psychology, nutrition, and well-being. It really is the ideal reset after a really challenging period and is brought to you by Carola and Dr. Vicky, who run a series of award-winning retreats. All of the details and your exclusive discount code are in the show notes, folks, should you want to take a look, and I really encourage you to do so. And finally, if you're enjoying the show, please do rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, as it enables us to keep bringing you more and more fantastic interviews with great leaders and subject matter experts. And do also go to www.ben-morton.com to check out my website and learn more about how I may be able to support you and your team. That's it for this episode, folks. See you in the next one very soon. Lead on.